Hello there from Washington. I'm Chuck Todd, and this is the Chuck Todd Cast. This week on Meet the Press Reports, we look at how different countries and cities are tackling the very hardest of challenges, essentially mitigating the impact of climate change. Today, I want to focus on green technology, solar power, batteries, and other tools designed to decarbonize, and on the question of whether we have the willpower needed to make the change. To help understand the state of science and the industry, my guest today is Matt Simon. He's a staff writer at Wired. He writes about science, biology, and the environment. Basically, this nexus here, because ultimately it feels like it's going to take a technological advancement for us to truly tackle the impact of climate change. So, Matt, welcome to the Toddcast.
And thanks for having me.
So this sort of focus, Ernest Moniz, the former Secretary of Energy, I had him on and we were talking about some issues having to do with nuclear proliferation. And then I was talking about the nuclear power issue and he got real animated and he says, he jokes with nuclear technology for energy. We're 40 years away from being 40 years away was always sort of a running sort of cliche and gag in the nuclear energy world. But he's been really, he said, this time it's for real. Like this time we're within 15 years. Nuclear fusion without waste seems like a real possibility, or limited waste, things like that. And ultimately, no matter what we try to do and everything else, until that happens, that's probably the only way we're truly going to get to clean energy. Is he right?
I mean, I think it's important to think about all these technologies, not in isolation, not in a vacuum. We have all the tools really right now we need to massively decarbonize our economy. We just need to get more solar panels and more wind turbines out the door and out into the wild. That's going to require massive subsidies from the government. There's been some modeling lately that says, we do have the technology right now to massively decarbonize with things also like heat pumps. It's a boring kind of appliance, but yeah, there are these things, different parts of the toolkit that I think will add up together to allow decarbonization.
All right, I want to focus on this because this is the other motivation here for speaking to you on this is the solar issue. If you want to put solar panels on your house and you want to try to decarbonize, the regulation, the power companies are trying to make it more difficult, not less. It does feel as if government isn't trying to assist this transition, but in many states, Florida is one that it's happening right as we speak. They literally changed the law to make it even less beneficial to go to solar financially. That this is actually a big piece of red tape that if we figured out how to solve, we might encourage a lot more people to go solar.
Yeah, it's definitely an issue. But the beautiful thing about solar panels is we can put them virtually everywhere and we can get really creative about what we do there. So we don't necessarily need to just put them on homes. Of course, if you want to decarbonize your home, that's very important. But there's actually a pilot project here in California where they're putting solar panels on canals, which has an added benefit of it reduces evaporation. So you keep more water. So scientists are actually coming up with more and more ideas of where to deploy solar panels, not so much in those giant farms that we're used to seeing, but dotting them more throughout the landscape. And then you kind of skirt
solar, let me take this to its extreme level. So we're worried about the amount of water in the Great Salt Lake. So solar panels in the Salt Lake could slow evaporation.
That would be a giant engineering challenge. So the good thing about canals here is that you can, it's a small span. You stretch a little bit of a solar panel over that.
But I get where you're going here. It's like, yeah, these are the type of things that we need to be looking at now, is what you're saying.
Let's get creative. Let's get very creative. Let's put solar panels on top of skyscrapers and then grow crops underneath them that provides energy, food, and actually ends up cooling the building as well. There's these really creative ideas around renewable energies beyond, okay, let's just put solar panels on people's roofs, which we have to do to decarbonize, but that's not the only tool in the toolkit.
So what stands in the way of this? How much of it is manufacturing solar panels? How much of it is industry who is afraid of competition?
This is where it gets extra tricky because we need to, first of all, get more solar panels off the manufacturing lines, but we don't have the labor required to decarbonize our economy. We're extremely short there. Countries like Germany have had trade programs for decades to train people up in these sorts of trades. But we're coming up on this really pivotal moment in human history where we are in desperate need to decarbonize in the United States. We have, I think, in a lot of states, the willpower. So a place like California, but we don't have the people power. We need to train more people to install heat pumps and solar panels and service wind turbines and things like that.
So this doesn't even feel like a focus of anybody's climate program.
No, it really should. No, we should be pumping tons of money into trade programs to train people up. You boost the economy that way too. And this is kind of the idea around the Civilian Conservation Corps, now rebranded as a Civilian Climate Corps, that has been stuck in legislation for a while. You throw money at the problem. You get people on the ground to install better insulation in homes and things like that. You increase energy efficiency. At the same time, you're boosting the economy that way. It's really a win-win, and it's beyond me how this legislation has not gotten through yet.
Well, yeah, welcome to Washington these days. I mean, it feels like, we could litigate that over and over. Are they trying to do too much at the same time? Are they not focused enough? I mean, we can argue that on both sides of that. But this gets at to, I do think there are plenty of Americans who would like to contribute to the cause in some way, right? And it doesn't feel as if we make it very easy for people to do their own part to help mitigate the impact of climate change, right? You know, and this is where I come back to the solar power issue. If you allowed people to take, you could argue this should be able to solve those that don't want government telling you what to do. It's a choice, you know, get it out there. But it seems like there's no groundswell of people pushing it.
Yeah, I mean, maybe this is a cliche at this point, but we need to elect politicians that are going to take the climate crisis seriously. We just don't have that in the United States at the moment. We have Democrats in control of the federal government, yet are struggling to pass substantial climate legislation. I get a little bristle that when we talk about this whole personal responsibility thing around climate change, that we should fly less, which is all well and good. Like, you should fly less if you think that's going to make an impact. But there are these massive systemic problems right now that we need to address. And that is, first and foremost, getting rid of fossil fuels. And we can't do that if we have a government that's friendly to fossil fuels. So decarbonization is a systemic issue. Get solar panels, please. Get a heat pump, please. But most importantly, we have to elect politicians that really need to take this seriously. We're running out of time.
No, look, I hear you on that big picture, but I do want to, the reason I'm focused on this incremental and on the consumer side of things, because I feel like that if you show consumer demand, then all of a sudden the politicians get braver. And they went, oh, people do want to decarbonize. People do want to do that. In some ways, this can help the politicians grow a spine when they actually see that, no, there's the public really wants to do this. Give them the opportunity to do this.
Yeah, and I think what they're really missing here is this idea called multi-solving in climate change, in particular in urban areas, where you say deploy a lot of electric car chargers in lower income neighborhoods. That increases adoption of electric cars, which of course you have to subsidize for those people. But that has a multi-solving benefit where you reduce emissions in those neighborhoods, you improve air quality, you improve public health. I don't think what politicians really realize is that decarbonization solves a bunch of problems at once. You improve public health, you get us toward a future where we're not burning fossil fuels anymore. And I think if they looked at that bigger picture, that this really helps their constituents to have a cleaner economy, both for the bottom line of the economy, but also just people's health.
Well, and to be even more crass about it, there's high gas prices. Go buy electric.
Yeah. I mean, but the issue with subsidies for electric cars right now is that for rich people, that's great. Yeah. But it's an electric car is still quite expensive. And the issue is that there are really no used electric cars. They're just too new. So when lower income folk usually buy a car, right, they buy used. That's just not possible with electric. That's why we need to massively subsidize them for these people. I mean, but also better yet, just massively boost public transportation. That's, I mean, think that's the end goal there, but we're always going to have cars in this economy as well.
So I want to try to get past your frustration of, can't we just elect politicians that are more focused on this? And I say that, take me to, you know, you're in California, a state that at least has its politicians that pay more lip service to this issue. What are some impediments there that you think could be taken down themselves and they haven't done it yet?
I think really it's not focusing on the kind of seemingly boring things around climate change. I've mentioned heat pumps before.
I love this.
And I'm sorry to nerd out about this.
Explain the heat pump
thing
more.
I just love them.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but heat pumps are fantastic. So a heat pump is a device for a home that works a lot like a refrigerator. A refrigerator cools your food by pumping the heat out of the inside of the refrigerator. A heat pump works the same way, but it extracts heat from outdoor air, even if that outdoor air is fairly cold, and pumps that heat inside into your home. And then in the summertime, that can actually reverse and it works like an air conditioner. What is great about this is that it's fully electric. You're not burning fossil fuels anywhere in this process. So in order to decarbonize our economy, we have to get heat pumps in every home. They're way more efficient than a space heater, way more efficient than fossil fuels, and you don't get the crazy emissions in a home from burning in a furnace. So the issue there is that we, again, do not have the people power. A state like California can just get this giant trade program and put people to work installing these things. But of course, we're going to need to fix supply chain issues here to actually produce these heat pumps. It's these really seemingly boring, and again, I'm sorry to harp on heat pumps. I just love them a lot. And climate scientists
I'm pissed off about what the state of Florida does. I'm just very familiar with it. The state of Florida at one time encouraged people to get solar panels. And in fact, you got a rebate for unused power that you contributed to the grid. And they essentially want to take away what created a financial incentive to actually, hey, you know what? You might save money in your power bill to go solar, which again, in some ways is a subsidy, right? It's a form of a subsidy without, you know, and the power company realized, oh, wait a minute, too many people may start to do this. And then suddenly, and they basically, you know, the Florida legislature is so, it's a corrupted institution. I don't want to say that the people there are corrupt, but the institution is just so easy to manipulate. It's not really a very small D Democratic legislature these days. And, you know, part-time legislature, the Florida Power and Light, which is the main power company, is basically got the law changed so that you know, they're going to grandfather people in who had solar panels before. They'll get to keep the deal. But again, I'm like, it's like me, it's like you harping on your heat pumps. It's like, why are you taking away an incentive to actually go solar?
I think we'll look back on this time in American human history and be baffled by what is happening right now. Again, coming back to this idea that we have the technology to massively decarbonize our economy.
Right now. We don't have to wait for nuclear. I'm sitting here talking about nuclear fusion without waste, right? Which is like the holy grail of nuclear, of sort of nuclear research. And you're saying, hey, that's great, but we can do a bunch of stuff now.
Nuclear is going to be a part of it, absolutely. But there's the solar and the wind that we have right now. Here's the other issue, though, is that we have an ancient electrical grid in the United States. We don't really have that technology to properly accommodate renewables. So the issue with renewables sometimes is that obviously solar panels don't work at night. Wind doesn't always blow. So what you need is to be able to ferry that electricity bigger distances across the United States, really, you know, wind from the Midwest down to the Southwest when the sun isn't shining, that sort of thing. We have to have this huge infrastructural project to update the grid to actually accept these renewables, which will be obviously much more coming online day by day. Again, we have that technology, but it's probably going to be held back by the fact that we just have an ancient creaky grid, as we have seen in Texas.
Basically, our grid is still analog.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
I was just going to say that Texas, what happened in Texas, I mean, their grid, they can barely manage it. I guess if more solar came on, it could, they might not be able to handle it. Is that the current concern, more renewable energy? The grid just doesn't have the ability to, it's just analog technology. I mean, to be to be simplistic about
it's really the intermittent nature of these renewables. Again, at night, the sun isn't shining. You're not getting solar panel. So solar panel energy. So what you need is ways to store this energy. And you could do it in giant batteries, which are, of course, very expensive, though that price has been crashing as well. So we have to get even cleverer about the way that we're going to be storing energy. There's some ideas around how we might actually store energy in data, you know, in data centers. You pre-crunch all that stuff that runs the internet when there's more renewables on the grid, store that data. You're essentially storing power in data. So it's weird, kind of far out techie stuff like that that's going to help. But again, these little things, heat pumps, solar panels, storing energy in data are going to add up to decarbonize. It's not going to be one thing that beats out over everything else.
Let me pause there. We'll be right back after a quick break. You're listening to the Chuck Toddcast from Meet the Press.
If you ever needed to be persuaded that bad things can happen anywhere, then take a journey with us.
From compelling mysteries to in-depth investigations, our Dateline episodes are available as podcasts.
Follow Dateline NBC now to get new episodes every Tuesday. To listen ad-free, subscribe to Dateline Premium on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or datelinepremium.com.
Great storytelling with a twist from the true crime original.
Join Hoda Kotb for a brand new season of her podcast, Making Space.
For season 5, I am making space to talk to people who are providing a sense of hope and inspiration when life changes course.
Uplifting conversations with inspiring individuals like NFL legend Drew Brees, singer-songwriter Ziggy Marley, and today's show co-anchor Savannah Guthrie as you have never heard her before.
I found faith more viscerally, not because the bad thing didn't happen, but because it did.
I promise you, like me, will leave these conversations with some wisdom for your own journey, empowered and inspired to make space in your own life.
New episodes of Making Space with Hoda Kotb are released every Wednesday. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
What about food technology? Basically, figuring out how to, you know, obviously our particularly on meat, we've all learned how much energy it takes to raise enough, particularly red meat. But we have it, if we put more effort into making sort of more carbon friendly food, if you will, what it takes to, maybe people will gravitate towards eating food that's more carbon friendly to create.
Right. Yeah. And this is another thing where we have a diversification of solutions. So alternative meats like Impossible or Beyond Burger, which really remarkably replicate the way that meat tastes. But also growing meat in labs could be a big thing. The issue here is that there isn't a tremendous amount of research on how much more efficient that might actually end up being. You're still going to need to use water for that. It's going to use a lot of power, but of course you would run those on renewable energies. But also, you know, getting rid of cows, no offense to cows, I love them. They're great. Their burps are terrible for the planet. That's a massive source of methane. So if we can cut that out, switch to alternatives, that'd be great. But we need much more research on just how much more efficient these things are going to actually be, because there's a lot of money being thrown at this and a lot of players in the space, you know, jockeying for position.
Let me get you out of here on this. Is America unique in not tackling this, or could we actually say the same thing in Europe right now, or the same thing in Asia?
We're really unique, I think, in the piecemeal nature of it. So California has been leading the way in renewables for quite some time, not so much as other states. And you really have this fragmentation. I think the West Coast is doing very well at decarbonizing so far, not so much other states. We don't have a big federal push for decarbonization, even though, again, Democrats are in control. This should have been the time to be doing that. We don't have that leadership. And it's really striking because, again, we have this technology. It'll be great for the economy if we boost jobs in renewable energies, yet they're sitting on their hands. You know more about the politics side of things than I do. I can't for the life of me make out what's happening.
The only hot take I'd have on this is that the branding of the Green New Deal sort of got out of hand on the left. The right abused it. And one pattern I've noticed with this president is that he's a bit risk averse sometimes and trying to, you know, when he sees, so, you know, take the immigration, you know, everything we're talking about on climate, I could make the same case on immigration. We know what the solution is. We know what our, what a sane asylum program should look like. We know all the things that we need. We're just choosing not to do it. And the politics, it's like this fear of the politics. And I think right now, because of inflation, because of high gas prices, which of course, scientifically should be a time to be focused on these issues, it has them running away from it, right? They've just worried about how their opponents were able to weaponize the Green New Deal against. And I look, it's my only, like I said, it's my hot take theory. I'm not saying it's, you know, definite, but I watch the Democratic Party get spooked all the time by the way the right attacks an idea and then suddenly they walk away. I mean, immigration, like I said, is the best example.
If I could actually come back again to this idea of the Civilian Conservation Corps, the original program back in the original New Deal to boost the economy out of the Depression, it was a massively popular program across the political spectrum. And they've actually done polling to show that a revitalized civilian climate corps would also be massively popular across the political spectrum because you're bringing jobs to rural areas in particular. And I just don't see how, you know, why is that still held up? If that's a massively popular program across the United States, it is a climate program first and foremost.
And guess what? And look, I was just in Iowa, Eastern Iowa, doing a story about the Democratic Party's problems in rural America. And the fact of the matter is nobody's anti-climate. You know, these aren't climate deniers anymore in rural America. These are people that are all like, hey, the weather's really changed our agricultural economy. All right. Do they want to have this? Do they talk about it the same way? Maybe you and I talk about it. No, but the impact's the same. Like they are looking for solutions. They're looking for solutions on access to water. They're looking for solutions on, you know, how do we, you know, should we be focused on different crops because, you know, rainy season is changing. I mean, you're right. Like there is, I think it's sort of, if you get the politics out of this or you know, if I would say, I normally would say if Disney introduced this, you know, people would be fine with it, right? You know, whatever, but not anymore. Yeah. Right? We polarize everything, but you see my point. Like if you got this sort of, because it does seem like something everybody can agree on. You live in Miami, you're worried about climate change. You live in Eastern Iowa, you're worried about the weather changing. Okay, they just use different language.
And it's so long-term, preparing rural communities in particular for climate change. So things like more flooding, a warmer atmosphere just holds more water. You get these flooding events more often. If there's ways that we can pump money right now into these areas to prepare them for a warmer planet, right, that's going to pay dividends for decades, for centuries, really. But this is a rapidly closing window that we have right now for just extreme action that we more than have the ability to do. I just get very frustrated by it.
Yeah, well, it's as you say, hope maybe we'll live long enough to let history vindicate us. Then again, history may vindicate us, and that's why we're not we won't live long enough to know. Hey Matt, on that cheery note, really appreciate this.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me.
You've been listening to the Chuck Toddcast from Meet the Press. Today's episode was produced by Justin Skilpin Green and Matt Rivera. Theme music composed by Spoke Media. You can catch Meet the Press daily on MSNBC every day at 1 p.m. Eastern. Meet the Press Reports is on demand on Peacock, and the big show's available every Sunday morning. Get it wherever you get your NBC programming. Thanks for listening. Until we upload again.